The city, however, does not tell its past, but contains it like the lines of a hand, written in the corners of the streets, the gratings of the windows, the banisters of the steps, the antennae of the lightning rods, the poles of the flags, every segment marked in turn with scratches, indentations, scrolls. Italo Calvino, Invisible Cities.
Sarnath Banerjee is an investigator of the ordinary. He combines image and text to excavate the hidden stores of humor and wisdom that lie in the landscape of everyday life. His graphic novels depict worlds that are at once exceptional and archetypal, in a manner that playfully articulates the yearning, absurdity, and ecstasy of our shared existence. In his most recent project, titled The Gallery of Losers, he was inspired by the thousands of athletes at the London Olympics who everyone forgets, the non-winners. He's now working on an uncanny history of the city of Bombay. Sarnath Banerjee lives in Berlin, but is at home in many cities. We found him in Delhi.
I did not stumble upon comic books. I just sort of, you know, was quite frustrated with everything that I was doing, and somehow it seems using text and image in imaginative ways has brought me to the language of comic books, where I use text and image to tell a story, relate an event, address a debate, create an atmosphere, create a sense of space, create a sense of time, create locality, create tone. And I just feel that if you want to do all these things intelligently and lightly, you use the sort of, you know, form of text and image. And at least that's, for me, it feels like it's a unique sort of a language in itself, which provides perhaps a third meaning which the text or the image in itself can't depict, you know. And I feel that we live in somewhat complex times. I guess people of in the past also said the same thing about their times, but I mean, I feel that my generation has different stories to tell in a different sort of a way. You don't start stories in a well-rounded A, B, C, D kind of a way. Your stories are sort of, you know, felt in a fragmented kind of a situation, intermittent, reluctant, hesitant, half-told, perhaps more like a conversation. And all this, I feel, somehow works well with what I do, with using text and image. So I think to tell modern stories, there must be an extremely modern form. And I feel people who use things that I use, which is text and image, have somewhat stumbled upon this modern form. Recently I was in Glasgow. I was having my first institutional solo show, and it felt amazing because parts of Glasgow felt a bit like Calcutta. So there was that sort of hint of danger, but that sort of only, because you know that the danger is not imminent, it feels almost like a thrill. Somebody once asked me, I mean, it's actually a Glaswegian writer, Alistair Day, who wrote this Lanark series in which he said that a city does not exist, you write about it. One city, the ghost of one city lives in another city. One city's past and another city's present. I'm sure, like, in order to recreate London, a television crew goes to Prague. So where is Prague? Prague is probably in Budapest. So, you know, cities move around in a very sort of interesting dynamic sort of ways. And then sometimes people pose these very experimental situations. Like recently, someone asked me, how do you find peace and quiet in Calcutta? I said, well, it's like looking for the wrong thing. You're looking for the right thing in a wrong city, wrong place. You're not looking for silence in Calcutta. You're looking for other things in Calcutta. But then perhaps also silence is in Calcutta, but it just has to be culled out, not through space, not through conventional means, but through time. Like right after office hours in Dalhousie Square, when the last tram has taken the last office goer out of the neighborhood, a sudden sort of, you know, eerie, almost like deathly calm sort of descends upon this sort of office district. The footpaths are still warm from the footstep of the office goers. But as it gets evening, and then there are these little dark patches, each of them sort of, you know, there is a prostitute sitting like in one of these sort of, or standing under these sort of arches, you know, giving you a slight sense of kind of danger that something can possibly like sort of go wrong. And then there's a tram depot nearby, which is like carcasses of like out of commission trams are like sort of, you know, sitting around in sort of large garden full of like, you know, dead trams. And some perhaps in sitting inside in one of these trams, you can find, you can experience a very deep and profound silence, perhaps more than you would ever feel in the Black Forest, like bang in the middle of the city. So, you know, the cities don't exist, really. Delhi, I mean, I seriously think, I mean, not in a New Agey kind of a way, but I really don't think cities actually exist or are fundamentally very different from each other. It's how you transplant your own, it's you vis-a-vis the city. And if you disappear, the city disappears as well. Often the city of Delhi disappears from me. It just feels like an alien, whatever, a non-place, an uncertain place. It's just what I make the city. And I, by writing the city, I claim it. I inscribe it and make it my own. I examine torpidity of society, of like a neighborhood waking up in the evening, a sort of a lower middle class government neighborhood sort of coming to life, children playing, people going for their maths tuition, somebody doing yoga, Bikram yoga for his virility, except he has no one to practice it on, someone watching a Hindi soap of a joint family, and wishing a family of his own, including a retired colonel father and that sort of thing. Or somebody newly married, sort of figuring out dark corners within his own government issued quarters, but he shares with his parents, trying to find a dark corner, but he can only find in his terrace where he can just sort of have a little fondle, I mean, sort of, you know, whatever. You know, the sort of the drama of absolutely just the ordinary stuff happening. I mean, and my mind is more sort of moved towards that direction now. Like an anatomist, you prise open body parts and then sort of, you know, hidden behind, wedged between two kidneys, somewhere behind your gut is a pancreas, and it does something to the system. So yeah, it is pricing open things, and it's like the same sensibilities of like being a bug collector, you know, sort of, you know, or Darwin, or what, I don't know, like just sort of picking things up with curiosity and love, which is very important. I've just discovered love. And you look at things with a lot of love and a lot of nurturing, and that, and you irradiate those objects, those hidden so-called knowledge, which you said, which is very appropriate, with, and you kind of explore the emotional history of that particular object, as the very nice German word for it would be Dingwelt. Ding as in thing, Welt as world, the thing of worlds, you know. It's like a held back cry, you know, held back sort of, it's about the held backness, you know. And you should respect the held backness. So you should not reveal it like, you know, like Daily Mirror, but you should sort of respectfully try to price it open. You should give value to these objects in your life.
To the restraint.
Yeah. Loneliness. I don't feel lonely. I mean, or I, my characters don't, they're not lonely as much as there's a disquiet. There's a disquiet of existence. There's a malaise. There's this sudden feeling that you are a citizen of the world and the world is doing what it does, but you're somehow, you're not included somehow. You're like in a city where you know it's thick with your friends, but somehow you're not connected to them. This sort of needing to, but then when you're connected to them, you're still somehow outside it. So this is more disquiet. It's not just physical manifestation of loneliness. The solution is constantly addressing and exploring that, and even enjoying it somehow. The fact that, you know, that the person sitting across from you in a bus number 38 between Hackney and Victoria was perhaps could have been your lifelong lover, except there's no way to know, because except you never get to talk to that person. It is a missed opportunity. Why don't we accept the fact that every moment we step out of the house, it is all about missed opportunities? We live in a fog of missed opportunities. So why tremble with fear or cry or become Marcus Aurelius about missed opportunities? It's just like state of being. I mean, it is our state of existence. There are a few rituals around which you base your life. I hold on to a few rituals. One is I, like a middle-aged Punjabi uncle, I go for a walk every morning. I make my own tea and porridge. I carry a smaller selection books which I put around me to kind of create a little space for myself, which at table I'm sitting in. I have my old t-shirts. I've got my old cup which I carry around with me, where from which I drink. Sort of mundane. I can't, for example, have carried the sound of this neighborhoods with me, because this is like ritualistic evening sound of like the bells and the guy selling anda and double roti. These things I can't carry with me to like say Buenos Aires or Berlin, but I have these sort of small rituals that I carry. Otherwise, you know, you can go like completely mad, because the desire is to as quickly as possible become as local as you can. And to become local very quickly, you have to carry your own rituals, but you also have to kind of bring your own in. I mean, you also sort of develop new ones. Like, you know, you have to figure out one boulangerie in Paris where you get all your baguettes from and sort of pretend that, okay, this is your, you know, you've transplant memory into that sort of thing. Or take a certain route while you're biking from home to the studio, which is what I do, 40 minutes of biking every day. And rituals grow up. And human mind is so amazingly, it's a slut to creating its own sort of, you know, connections and memories and stuff like that. It just wants to adjust all the time. And it's been all right. But that's a very interesting question. I should perhaps think of it, about it more. How does one transplant one's local into another? Mm. Oh, I have my mother coming on Skype telling me recipes. That's one way of feeling very rooted. I have the computer put on the edge of the fridge, and my mother physically tells me that you've just given too much mustard seeds. It's sitting on my head, pretty much. So that's another So there are, we all have techniques and negotiate this movement. Sure, which century, whether the 12th or 13th, around somewhere around that time, in London, there was this Scrabblerius Club. The motto of the Scrabblerius Club was that if you have to at all express knowledge, or basically, you know, impart knowledge or reveal knowledge, you can only do it playfully. So the only way you can displace knowledge is by playing with it. And one of the most famous members of the club is Jonathan Swift. I think the process of assimilation, the process of sort of comprehension, where you take deep, complex things, you know, of the universe, you know, world of things, universe, whether it's evolution, whether it's Higgs boson, whether it's complex political scenario, understanding it and somehow having a conversation about it and having a sort of revealing it by through your own, you know, through the filter of your own interpretation is, I feel, perhaps what I aim to do and what I want to do. So sort of light yet intelligent, which goes back to the Olympic, and one of my Olympian loser is a high jumper, and one of the things he does is that he eats light food, listens to light music and reads light literature so that he can levitate. And I think, yeah, knowledge should rise, you know, like inside an oven. And so I'm actually quite, I've got very little patience for like sort of self-obscuring devices where you sort of create a certain kind of, you know, a language of deception, I almost think, of language of, a heavy language of deception. To sort of couch meaning, number one, that's one lot. And the second lot, what they do is that they don't have the means or means of communication to actually tell something rather easily and you know, very quickly. And that also, so these are all, both are communication sort of failure or communication dishonesty. I mean, of course, there are certain complex things which you can't talk about. Everything can't be talked about simply. But the essential approach should be to that of like a certain kind of intelligent lightness. Till recently, I figured out the only way I could actually intelligently talk about how my process works is in how I write and draw. The nearest thing is composing music, where you have your keyboard next to you, your piano next to you, and you have a sheaf of paper, and you're just sort of, you know, playing something, noting down what you've just played, and the other way around, you've just written something and you just play and test it out. And this is how, this dance is what goes into actually composing a comic book. It's a very integrated approach, perhaps nearer to dance and to singing, because dance, singing, even music, there's something very corporeal about it, if you know what I mean. Painting is not so corporeal, but comics is, I feel, it's very corporeal, more than cerebral. Mm. Something very sort of animal and instinctive about it as well.
This piece was produced by Meera Sharma and Henry Peck.
This has been Almira Radio. Thank you for listening.